Any story you're going to tell that should be valuable to a listener should have you in it. Like it has to be a story that you are involved in. Now, it could be, hey, I was listening to this podcast and I heard this story about, but it needs to have you in it because otherwise, if it's a story, they could go online and Google and, hey, how did Howard Schultz start Starbucks? What did that mean? If they can go find it, then it's a good story. But it's not, it can't be a great story.
Stories are like software for the brain. Once they're uploaded, they can be recalled, replayed, and inspire action again and again. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. I'm your host, Steve Sandusky. My guest today is Don Yeager. Don is a Hall of Fame keynote speaker, a business leadership coach, a 12-time New York Times bestselling author. He's the host of the highly rated Corporate Competitor podcast. And he's National Geographic's storyteller in residence. He's also a longtime associate editor for Sports Illustrated and one of America's premier thought leaders on storytelling, leadership, and greatness. In today's show, we dive deep into the art and impact of storytelling, and we explore how mastering this skill can transform your business, your leadership, and your personal life. We also talk about why storytelling is one of the most powerful leadership tools available to you and how it can help drive meaningful action. We discuss some of the essential elements that every impactful story must include, and Don shares some practical tips to find and craft stories from everyday experiences that will resonate deeply with your audience. You can also visit ceocoachinginternational.com and download Don's free toolkit on 45 questions you can ask to help you develop your own bank of stories. With that, please enjoy my conversation with Don Yeager.
There's so much research and centuries of evidence that the ability to tell a story, the ability to actually use language to draw people to you, is one of the greatest gifts that someone can develop for themselves. And people remember stories far longer. Far more impactfully than they'll remember statistics. You could tell them, I can get you 100% return on investment. Sounds good. 100% is a good number. But if I can tell you the story of somebody for whom I got that 100% and they ended up retiring on those islands of Antigua, if I can tell you how what I did made a difference to someone like them, that's when they begin to see themselves and they see how the numbers actually relate to who they are and where they want to go.
And this idea that you remember the story, it makes me think that stories are like software for the brain, in that you can call up the story, like you can call up a software program and just replay it again in a different context. And that's one of the things that I think is super powerful about storytelling, is it lasts far beyond the initial time that the story was told. If it is a story well told, that's memorable, then people can call that up in different contexts, and it really has a lasting impact.
And there are times that people can't necessarily remember the name of the storyteller, but they can remember the story.
Right,
And
exactly.
which then becomes the strength, right? You want to be able to deliver a story that's done well enough that they'll remember it, but then you'd love it to be one that they would also remember connecting it to you.
You're one of the best storytellers out there. So, what got you interested in storytelling? And do you think you were a born storyteller? Were you a developed storyteller? Maybe a combination of the two?
I'll answer those two questions in reverse order. Number one, I don't believe anyone is a born storyteller. Frankly, like I think of leadership, I don't think people are born leaders. I think it is a skill you develop. But that's a point of hope for most of us, right? That you're not a born storyteller, but you can develop it. Are you willing to do the work to do that, which is really important. Your first question, which was how it came to be for me, I am the son of a preacher. And I've shared this story a few times. My father used to always talk to me about the power of storytelling. He said, storytelling is so powerful, it can create enormous good. It can also create enormous difficulty, right? It can be used for evil as well. He argued that the two best storytellers in history were Jesus Christ and Adolf Hitler, right? And both of them got masses to follow them. Largely on their ability to tell great stories, right? And to convince you that they had something worth following. But my father used to tell me that all the time when I was a kid, and I used to laugh. Oh, I'm sure it's because that's what you do, Dad. You're a storyteller. And then one day, it was my freshman year in college. I had come home for Thanksgiving, and for Thanksgiving at our house always was it was filled with tons of people, right? That was what my parents loved to do, was to host others, especially on holidays. And on this particular Thanksgiving, as it was time to serve the meal, my father stood up and he cleared his throat and started telling a story to the room. And it was a simple story, but at the end of the day, it changed me because instead of listening to the story that day, I watched others listen to my father tell a story. And I saw how he was using elements, the ability to pull him in, A, with his voice, but B, with the detail that he offered, the drama that he presented, the dialogue that he created. I saw the way he was doing it, and I watched others lean forward, and I thought, man, I want to be able to do that. That would be cool. And so that was the day I became hooked on storytelling. And I started then, literally the next day, who are the great storytellers? What can I learn from them? Who could I go visit that are great storytellers to try to ask questions? I wanted to master the art. And as I said in answer to your other question, I realized it was a skill I could work on. I haven't stopped a day since.
You use the word art here, and at the risk of getting reductionist here, are there certain elements that make up a good story, or is it an alchemy of a variety of different things with the art mixed in there? How would you define perhaps a few elements of a great story?
I believe there are 10 elements of a great story, and that's what I often talk to audiences about, is what are those 10 elements? And you can watch all of them come into play when somebody does a really fantastical job of drawing you in. But the two that I talk about most often are the two elements that I think are most missed by those who want to be better storytellers. I think this is where they miss. Number one, they haven't done enough research to know their audience well. If you know your audience and you do that by researching, who am I talking to? What can I know about them? Why do they need to listen to me? You do some research. The second piece of that is you look for what you have in common with them. Because if I can point out some element of commonality between me and a member of the audience, it immediately makes them hear me differently. Nothing makes someone more interested in you than when they realize you've shown interest in them. And you show interest in them by doing some research about who they are and who you're with. And then once you do that, actually, you get to that, the inner core of a three concentric circle model that I believe we can use to know our audience better. And when you get to that center core, you're able to ask better questions. You're able to say things that leave more lasting impact. But it's because you've done the research, you established common ground, and then you've come to that center core. So once you know your audience better, that's one element that I think most storytellers fail in. The other one is most don't have an explicit call to action. And call to action sounds so formal, right? It's a great business phrase and we all love it. But at the end of the day, it should, if you're really telling a story of impact, you should know, as the storyteller, what you want the listener to do, think, or feel when they're done listening to you. And by the way, good storytellers don't leave that to chance. They are intentional in making sure you do, think, or feel what it is they want from you. So I would argue that those are the two places, two of the most important elements, but also two elements of a well-told story where many people who want to do better fail.
I want to relate storytelling to actual art, and let's say it's a painting. And I think oftentimes artists who are painting, they paint something, but they don't specifically want the viewer of that art to say, I painted this painting because of this, and I want you to feel this, that, or the other thing, or go do this as a result of seeing my painting. Now, here we talk about storytelling. And you just said that have a call to action. I want the listener of the story to do, think, or feel something as a result of that. So, how do you think about an artist with a painting that says, I'm painting something and I'm leaving it up to you to interpret based on your life experiences, based on what this work of art means to you? Is art that much different than, say, a well-told
But
story?
so what I would tell you is, first off, I think storytelling is an art form, right? I think there's a reason why you still find paintings on caves, right, from millennials ago. Not all artists, not all art forms are intended to be seen or reacted to the same way. Fiction and nonfiction books are intended to draw different reactions from you, right? There's a reason why there are different forms of art. And by the way, there are stories that can be told that are not intended to make you do think or feel something. The storytelling I'm talking about is storytelling that is designed for impact, right? I'm an impact storyteller. I want my stories to move you, to get you to do something, to make you feel something. And impact storytellers, there are impact artists too, impact painters who do what they do because they want you to feel like you're in the presence of God or that you're in the presence of something. And so that while there are artists, painters who might say, I don't want to make you think anything specifically, I want you to express it for yourself. I think that's true of storytelling. I often think of those as the stories you tell around a campfire. I might just be having fun around a campfire and I don't really care what you do think or feel out of it. I'm talking about impact storytelling, which is a form of art within the art. Does that make sense?
Totally. And as it relates to trying to make an impact, as you're thinking about the story that you want to tell, how do you think about the idea of you, Don, telling a personal story about Don's life that may have universal appeal, but it's Don's story, it's Don's experience, versus telling a different story, which isn't necessarily your personal experience, but it's maybe something that the whole audience can share. So, is there a way to think about a very specific Don personal story that you might think, oh, how is this going to relate to people in the audience? Because they're very different from Don. But does Don's personal story have a universal appeal? Is that one way to think about a good story?
Welcome to the CEO Coaching International podcast. What we do on this show is we find the world's leading entrepreneurs and CEOs, and we spend about a half hour with them and really dig into their story. We want to understand the strategies and the tips and the tools that they use to make big happen in their business. And by the end of each episode, you'll have actionable ideas that you can implement on your path to big success. To learn more about CEO Coaching International and how we can help you dramatically grow your business, visit us at CEOcoachingInternational.com.
Absolutely. So I argue that there's a three-part process to this, right? First is what's the story you're going to tell, right? But then you need to know what was the lesson you learned from the story you told. Story, lesson. And then the third is how can the audience or the listener apply the lesson that you learned from the story? They'll remember the story. What you want them to do is take the lesson and apply it. Story, lesson, application. Every time I tell a story, I want to make sure it's uber clear what I learned in that moment. Don't leave that to the imagination, because if you leave it to the imagination, you will get people all over the room. And I want to be very clear of what I learned. And then I want to be equally clear of how I want them to apply it. Story, lesson, application is a thought process there. And it doesn't matter, by the way, how personal a story is. If the story has a lesson in it that you can learn from, then I have made the story relatable to you. It does not matter if my lived existence is far different from yours, right? I have taken the stories of men and women who I've worked with who are billionaires, who I will never be able to relate to, right? The private jet lifestyle. But if I focused only on the parts of their story and that I'll never be able to relate to, then, oh, by the way, it is not a story that has a call to action for me. So you have to reduce what they're talking about to something, a lesson that's relatable and a point of application that I can use. And when you do that, you can take almost any story from almost anyone and make it valuable to a listener. And that's the goal.
As someone who tells stories professionally, do you tend to tell stories about Don's experience, or do you share other people's stories, or do you do both?
So one of the elements of a well-told story that I would tell, I remember I told you there were 10. One of the other elements is that any story you're going to tell that should be valuable to a listener should have you in it. Like, it has to be a story that you are involved in. Now, it could be, hey, I was listening to this podcast and I heard this story about, but it needs to have you in it. There needs to be an, because otherwise, if it's a story, they could go online and Google and, hey, how did Howard Schultz start Starbucks? What did that mean? If they can go find it, then it's a good story, but it's not, it can't be a great story. A great story has you in it, because that allows you to feel like you've got a piece and you understand the value of the story. And so it's important in that sense that I don't necessarily tell Don stories, but I do tell stories that I have a relationship to. Probably one of the most impactful stories I tell often is a story about a running back, former NFL running back named Warwick Dunn. He was 18 years old, senior in high school. His mother was a police officer in Baton Rouge, and she was shot and killed in a robbery at a bank. He goes on to college, takes his brothers and sisters with him, actually doesn't just graduate from college, but becomes the all-time leading rusher in the history of Florida State University. He helps them win a national championship, and he becomes a top 12 pick in the NFL draft. Unbelievable, right? Because he's a little guy. He's only 5'8", 178. Has an extraordinary career in the NFL, but during his time in the league, he starts a charity buying homes for women like his mother, single moms who work multiple jobs to keep a roof over their head. He wins the NFL Man of the Year award, gets a chance to write a book, asked me to help him write the book. And to finish the book, he and I go to death row to meet the guy that killed his mom. And while we're sitting there in a cell on death row, he looks at the man and says, "I came here today to forgive you." Now, the story is not my story. It's the story of Warwick Dunn. But I can tell it with a great level of authority because I sat in a cell. You could tell it with a great level of authority because you were listening to this podcast where you heard somebody tell his story about this amazing thing that happened. When you tell a story, if you want it to have great impact, somewhere the listener needs to see you and your participation, your understanding. How did you get connected to this story? And as you explain that, the credibility of what the listener hears climbs. Again, the ears open up more greatly.
That was a very impactful story that you just told. And one of the things that I was picking up as you were sharing that is the tone in which you were saying that story, just a reverence in your tone in terms of how you were sharing that, I thought was really impactful. And that, I think, is something that comes through that's heartfelt. It's not like a planned thing, a technique sort of thing. It's like you have a connection to that story. It was meaningful to you. And so there was no performative aspect to that. It was just a very true to the heart story. And I think that was very impactful.
So one thing I say often about storytelling, and I disagree in this space from some other people who claim to be really great storytellers or who are probably really great storytellers. There's some who say you should never tell an emotional story because you don't want to show emotion while telling a story. I completely disagree. I think if you tell an emotional story and you do it dispassionately, it's not really that emotional, right? You can't expect the listener to be emotionally touched by what you're doing and not show that you're touched by it as well. So I'm grateful that you picked up on in the intonation. But yes, I have enormous reverence because I don't know that I could have done what I watched that man do, right? But the call to action out of that story, it came with Warwick Dunn was sharing with me how he arranged, how he thought to do that day. And he said his mother always taught him that there will always be days where something is going to happen that will change the way you live the next day, right? There's always something that's going to happen that will make a difference. And in that moment, you get two choices. You can be bitter or you can be better. And as my son, I ask you to always choose better. So the call to action when I'm telling the story to an audience is, now imagine your set of circumstances. You could be bitter or you could choose better. And if Warwick Dunn has the capacity to choose better, you do too. And it allows people to start reframing what they're going through or what their situation is. So again, all of it, I say this a lot about storytelling, and it's why we say it's not that it is a learned skill, because it's intentional, right? I'm intentionally thinking about how I'm going to make you feel at the end of that story. And what I want you to feel is empowered to be better the next time something doesn't go the way you expect it.
And it's one thing to tell a story, but to tell a story, we've got to come up with the story. So what are some ways for us to find those stories that are around us? Because I believe that stories are everywhere. And if you're just paying attention, totally they're going to be there. But I'm sure you've
it
got
always
some
cracks
specific.
Me up. You've probably heard it too, like where somebody says, I'd love to be a good storyteller, but I don't have any stories. Are you kidding
right.
me? They're, again, I live in stories, so I see them all
right.
the time.
Yep.
But one of the things, Steve, and I'll send this to you if it's a benefit to your listeners. A couple of years ago when I was challenged this way, I actually wrote down 45 questions. I've got a link to it I could send you. You can put it in the show notes if you want. But it's 45 questions that if you start looking at these questions, they will inspire stories that you can tell. Questions like, tell me about someone you work with who absolutely just fires you up. Like you're so, like you watch that person go through what they're going through, and you watch what you're so inspired by them that like they make you want to come to work to make sure that you're in their presence. Who do you work with that inspires you? As you start to answer that question, you realize there's a great story there, right? I work with Angie, and Angie is fantastic in this way. And by the way, what does the listener get? The listener understands that you're telling a story about somebody else, which is always cool, but they also get what matters to you because you're telling the story about why Angie is so fantastic. What it is that you watch Angie do every day for those you serve that makes you fired up about coming to work and getting a chance to hang out with Angie.
Yeah, we will definitely link to that in the show notes at ceocoachinginternational.com. And I think you've perhaps shared some of these ideas, but I'd love to hear, are there some other habits of the best storytellers? Now, one, paying attention, we're talking about here to come up with some story ideas, but let's talk about you, for example. Like, what are some of your habits that enable you to be an effective storyteller?
One of the other things, and I think it's important to have your open and your close to any story. If you're going to really be good at telling it, you should memorize it. A couple things happen when you spend a little time memorizing an opening and a closing, right? Remember, the closing is going to be your call to action. So you need to know that. When you spend a little time, how do I lock that down? A, as you begin to tell the story, maybe you're standing in front of a room of 1,000. Maybe you're sitting across the table from one. But as you get ready to tell the story, if you're not stumbling, if you're not searching for ideas or facts or words because you've got it down, what happens is you get into a flow, right? You get in, you start building some momentum. As you are telling the story, confidence rises because you realize you're telling them something that's got their attention. I argue it's like the fireworks show. When we think of fireworks shows, there's always an amazing explosion at the beginning, right? And everybody gets, ooh, wow. And then there's a nearly equally great explosion at the end. There's a lot of stuff that happens in the middle, but the opening and the closing matters. That's why they put so much effort into it in a fireworks show. And we should put effort into it as a storyteller as well. So if I decide this is a story I want to learn how to tell better and that I want to be able to tell in certain situations, I always say, okay, let me craft what that opening could look like so that I could try to figure out if I'm sitting at lunch with you and something comes up and you tell me a story about a really tough time in your life, something that's really going on with you and you're struggling to figure out how to respond, I want to be able to tell you that work done story. But I want to be able to tell it in a way that I'm not searching for what I'd want to say. So the idea is, I believe you need to know your open, you need to know your close in every story that you want to be able to tell well.
You said the word memorize. I think some people are going to say, oh, if I just memorize it, then it's not going to sound authentic because I'm just reading my own mental script here that I've rehearsed 100 times. So how do you think about really knowing your story, having it written down? When you tell your story, do you tell it like 98% of the words in that Warwick Dunn story that you tell, are they the same every time you tell it, or does it slightly
Absolutely.
Change in the moment?
No, it'll
how do you
change
think of that?
Based upon timing. So normally when I tell the work done story, it's 11 minutes long. I told it to you and it was 2 minutes, maybe. So obviously cut a lot of detail out of it. Cut a lot. I also often tell it when I'm telling it in front of a room with video of Warwick and I walking onto death row together, right? Running in the background. There's additional graphics and other things happening. But there are certain phrases and key things that I know resonate well with people that, yes, I am locked in. And if you heard me tell that story in front of a room of 1,000 people tomorrow, you'd hear some of those same words that I said to you, obviously in a different timing, a different form. But yes. And the reason I choose to memorize those words is that as I've thought through that story, I think through it as the listener. What can I say that will really resonate with them? Talk the story about his mother and the idea that he wanted to build homes for women like his mother, right? And I even say it with the same cadence. Why? Because I want you to hear that he built homes for women like his mother, single moms working multiple jobs to keep a roof over the heads of their children, right? Yes, that phrasing, I use it most often the same way, whether I'm telling it in front of 1,000 people or on a podcast with you. But the deal is, it's because I know that in you hearing those words, you're imagining what an extraordinary human being he is. And the more of that I can get from you, the more likely you are to go, what happens next to this guy? And ultimately, when I land you in the prison cell, it's crazy.
I have a colleague that is a great storyteller, and I've heard him tell a particular story many times. And there's a particular point in the story where if he says the line and then pauses for a couple seconds and then starts the next point to it, he gets a huge laugh. There are other times when he gets to that point, and instead of pausing for 2 seconds, he just rushes through to the money shot line and it falls flat. And when you talk about, quote, do you memorize something? Do you perform something? I think that really supports the idea of what you're saying. It's like, yeah, you really got to know your story. You got to know the pause
What
there,
works? You got to know
what
what
works.
doesn't, right?
Yeah.
And so some of it is trying out the story, right? Maybe telling it to somebody who might even know the story, but now you're telling it to them in a way. Again, I'm suggesting here that if you want to be good at this, it's just like being good at anything else. You got to work on it, you got to develop it, you got to practice it. You wouldn't go play in the Super Bowl without having practiced. And yeah, I'm working on stories, developing them in my mind, I'm writing them down. I'll record them, I'll listen back to them. I'm fascinated by how stories can move people. And I want to encourage other people to use stories to move people.
I want to talk about persuasion. So as we talk about trying to move people, we want to persuade people. And I also want to talk about the role that facts play or don't play in stories in persuading people. Because there's a lot of people out there today who try and persuade through facts. And for the most part, that doesn't seem to persuade other people because their facts are more meaningful than your facts, right? And so how do you think about persuasion in storytelling, and what role do facts play in that?
I'm going to differentiate between facts if you're trying to use
Or
statistics, right?
statistics. Yeah. Yep.
I've generated this return for people or whatever it might be versus details. And I argue that in either case, remember, got to know our audience. We got to know what we want them to do, think, or feel. Everything that happens between there needs to be in service of those two things. So if it's a detail that's not going to resonate with that audience, now remember, you may have an audience that's filled with financial advisors, and facts might actually mean a lot more to them than they could be to the single mom who you might be trying to work with, who doesn't really have a great sense of financial understanding, right? So know your audience, and that'll tell you what facts and what things you can use. But then also, what do you want them to do, think, or feel? And if you glaze their eyes over with statistics, you're not going to be able to get them to do, think, or feel anything. You're going to lose them in that process. So every detail, every fact should be in service of those two end points. But it also should, you should ask yourself, does the sharing of that detail, does it add to the credibility of my story? Are they getting something? Does that fact mean something to them? like I told you, 268 homes he's given to single moms, right? That's to tell you the largeness. Like, this isn't like he did it once. This is a guy who has an enormous heart, and he shows it. It's a detail meant to improve your understanding of the story. If I told you, and the last one he gave was on January 12th at 2 a.m., suddenly the fact that I'm giving you actually might make you go, wonder why he was giving away a home at 2 a.m., right? Was there something special about January 12th? So sometimes you can load too many facts and statistics, and you actually clutter your story as opposed to add credibility to it. Everything you do should add to the credibility of what you're trying to get them to. And in that situation, you need to make sure you're thinking about your audience and your call to action.
Speaking of cluttering the story, I've been accused, mostly by my wife, of droning on sometimes and taking too long to get to the point of a story. And so how do you think about the length of a story? And I don't remember who wrote this, but people would say the shortest story ever written was four words. Do you know which four words I'm talking about?
Yes, it's baby shoes never worn. Yeah.
Correct. Yes, yep. Exactly. And so, yeah, you can have a story in four words, or you can have an 11-minute work done story, like you mentioned, or you can tell his story in 2 minutes. How do we think about the length of the story?
Two things. Number one, I think about the length as in how does it play into what you're doing for the audience, the listener, right? If you've got 5 minutes to make an impact on someone, don't try to tell them an 8-minute story, right? If you've got an hour to speak to them, you can spend a little more time with it. But again, every story should only last as long as it continues to connect to the listener. And that's why when I told you earlier that you need to memorize your call to action, you need to know what you want them to do, think, or feel at the end. Part of the reason I said that to you is that one thing I teach when I'm talking to people about how to be better storytellers is that sometimes you begin to lose your audience. And it's pretty obvious. You can see it, right? In speaking, we have what we call the white glow of death, right? Which is when you look out and you can see everybody's got their phone under the table and they're checking last night's baseball scores, right? Because the white glow is coming up onto their face and you've lost them, right? They are no longer listening to you. They're on their phone. When you begin to sense that you're losing an audience, and this is watching, right? Paying attention. That's when you need to figure out how to close the story and get to the call to action. And that only works if you know your call to action. What did you start this story hoping to accomplish? And so I would argue that's an important point here. And that if your wife is right and you're droning on too long and you're realizing now she's recutting the same carrot she just cut three times already, then it might be time for you to bring it in for a landing.
So I mentioned you're a pro at this. Is there any aspect of storytelling that you are still trying to really hone that craft? Is there one aspect of storytelling that is more difficult for you than some of the others?
I think all of it. To me, I don't think, again, I'm a self-improvement junkie, right? I don't think you ever quite get there. I think when you believe you've arrived in any aspect of it, you probably are starting to fade at that stage. So I'm always working on all of it. I'm trying to figure out, how do I make sure that pause is just the right length, right? How do I make sure that what I do doesn't step on the opportunity, to your point earlier, right? To let somebody laugh and breathe and maybe enjoy something for a second. How do I make sure that I'm creating the right emotional balance that exists in a story? You don't want people to be too sad for too long, or laughing so much for so long that at the end of the day, you can't bring them in to your call to action. So you need to have a little bit of balance in the way you tell a story. So I would tell you, I'm working on it all the time, all of it. But I will also share with you, every great storyteller that I've gone and spent time with will tell you the same thing. They're constantly working to get better at it.
You mentioned the balance. So I think of someone like a Barbara Walters. Every time she's interviewing someone, they start crying. How do you think about the rhythm? And do you have in your mind, or as you're developing a story, do you think about, okay, I want to start at a high and then I want to take them down a little bit and feel an emotion. And then I want to bring them out of that emotion. And then I want to get them to laugh. And then I want another emotion and I want to end on a high. Do you think of it like a song, or how do you view that?
I think of it just like a movie. And most movies start with some level of either a little bit of humor, something that you're a little puzzled by. Then you get into, there is a good rhythm to it. I do think that in the early part of almost any good story, if you can create some level of humor, something funny, laughter is a really great way. You're not asking them to dig deep emotionally yet. Laughter's easy. Laughter happens, but it allows them to feel engaged.
You've written or co-written 40 books with some really famous people. I'd love for you to share one or two ideas or stories from some of the folks that you've written about and written with. You mentioned that you're a personal improvement junkie. What are some of the things that you've learned over your long life that have been very helpful to you?
I lived with Walter Payton, a great running back of the Chicago Bears. I lived with Walter Payton for the last 10 weeks of his life as he was dying to write his autobiography. And he was my hero. I wanted to be Walter Payton when I was a kid, when I was playing football. But what I learned was that he, for all his great skill and all the things that I saw, was even better when he wasn't on a platform, on a stage, on a field. I think what that taught me is that, and there are a lot of people I've met over the years, honestly, who are two completely different people. And it's usually more negative when they're not. They're positive, they're engaging, they're wonderful. Gosh, I love that person. And then you meet them and you get to realize how they treat other people. And you go, man, I don't want anything to do with that person. So what I saw was, if you're going to be two people in your life, be even better off the stage, be even better off the camera, off the field, because Walter showed me that's possible. A lot of people, you sit and you go, gosh, as fantastic as they are, could they be better in the other parts of their life? And the truth is, yes, you can. Walter Payton showed it to me.
Don, is there anything else that you want to add here as we get ready to wrap up?
I love talking about storytelling. I guess you can probably figure that out, because I believe, and I have worked with so many people who have gotten better at it because they've paid attention to some of these details. They've chosen to do some of this. I'd love anybody that's listening to this to realize that if you immediately think, no, that's not going to be for me, I'm not that great of a storyteller. And if you realize that storytelling would make you better at your profession or at your, maybe with your family or with your friends, take time, because it's available to you.
One of the ways that I got introduced to you was from your podcast. So you have a podcast called Corporate Competitor. Tell me a little bit about that, because I think there's a great story behind it in terms of the people that you are having conversations with on that podcast.
Thank you for that. Several years ago, ESPN had written an article detailing how they had partnered with EY, Ernst & Young, to do research in which they were targeting women who were C-level executives in Fortune 500 companies. And what they wanted to know amongst those women was, what did they have in common? And the number one thing they had in common was that they played sports at some stage in their life. 52% of them played sports collegiately. And so obviously the ability to be part of a team, to be able to be competitive and yet know how to win, know how to lose, all those things that come with being in sports made them capable of climbing the corporate ladder more rapidly. And so I filed that away. I thought that'd be cool. During the pandemic, I thought the world needed one more podcast. And so I decided to start interviewing executives, started with some women, but men as well, who played sports, about what did playing sports teach them in the way of leadership. We've had Condoleezza Rice. We've had Brian Moynihan, the CEO of Bank of America. We've had Brian Cornell, the CEO of Target. Bob Chapek, CEO of Disney. We've had so many CEOs who all played sports who've come on to talk about this connection between sports, their corporate competitor journey, right? And how it made them a better leader. And it's a fantastic leadership podcast. My cup gets filled because I get a chance to learn from these great leaders.
And as someone who loves to learn, what's one or two ideas that you've picked up, or perhaps some threads that you've picked up in the different conversations that you've had on that podcast about leadership, about success?
I would tell you one, for example, came from Condoleezza Rice. I loved it when she said, you know what, when I'm looking at an organization, when I'm looking at a team, I want to be invested in a team that has an identity, right? What is your identity? If collectively you get told no, or collectively you get beaten down by a competitor, what's your response? What's your identity? And she goes, and you look at Michigan State basketball, for example. Everybody knows when you're getting ready to play Michigan State, you better have your elbow pads on because they are going to beat the tar out of you. And they're not
or
just
the Detroit Pistons back
or the
in
Detroit
the day.
Pistons. Right. Those teams had identity. Great teams have, you know what's coming and you can't stop it. And that's a great team. That's what you want to be involved in. And it made me start thinking about teams that I was fascinated by. What would their identity be if you had to understand them? The Super Bowl in 2025, you get the Philadelphia Eagles, who love to run the football. They have a huge offensive line. That is their identity. They're going to beat you. They're going to run at you. And then every once in a while, they'll throw a pass, and you'll be shocked because you're so physically worried about their running game. The Kansas City Chiefs have the magic behind their quarterback, and everybody on their team believes they're going to win at every game because they have this magical quarterback. And so they have identities that are very different. Both of them are great teams. And so the idea of, does your team have an identity? What do your opponents think of you when they're going head to head with you? What do they worry about? And if the answer is they're really not worried, then by the way, your chances of long-term success are pretty limited.
Excellent. All right, Don, what is the best way for folks to connect with you? We've mentioned the podcast. You've got all these books out there as well. Is there a website you want to direct people to, or?
Yeah, it's donyaeger.com, donyaeger.com. Although I was smart enough to buy the URL for Don Yeager spelled the other way, so that if you misspell it, you'll still end up on my page, which is a lesson that I learned many years ago. I'd be grateful, Steve, and we'll make sure to get those 45 questions to you as well.
All right, Don, very much appreciate it.
Thank you. Appreciate the time.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Now, I have a question for you. How are you going to implement and benefit from the ideas that you hear on our show? Well, we would love to have a conversation with you about that, so please visit us at ceocoachinginternational.com. We can then set up a call, and we can talk about how we can help you make big happen in your business. Thanks, and we look forward to sharing our next episode with you.